I've taught you much, my little droogies. Now tell me what you had in mind, Georgie boy.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 106 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we've got a big, thick, meaty episode for you today. So what have we got coming up?
The topic this time round, and it's not very meaty, but it's our rom-coms top three. So I'm excited because, again, there's so many to choose from.
And it's weird that we've not covered this before.
It's not. You're in the podcast. You hate anything romantic at all.
Yeah, there is that.
So I've avoided it, and I'm getting to the point where I'm scraping the barrel that bad. I thought I'm going to have to just use it now.
Oh, God, I'm going to have to do musicals next.
Well, there's an idea.
Hey, it's my pick today, boys. Oh, our main review is Marvel's latest offering, Venom.
Yeah.
Venom.
Yeah.
That's Venom.
Stick around for our views on that one.
or don't. Yeah. Up to you. You won't miss much. Our rewatch is Stanley Kubrick's classic A Clockwork Orange.
Wow.
Stick around for that one.
That one is worth sticking around for.
Definitely.
Also, our quiz, it's the final round of Actor Factor, and it's Team Barky Bark. But because of this episode, I think we should change our name to Benham.
Benham, okay.
Benham
okay.
And Benham. All right. I like it.
All right.
Yeah.
That's happened.
Sure. That didn't take much convincing. So stick around and see just how powerful Team Benham can be today.
Our movie masturbate this time around is David O. Russell. Now, he's not done a lot of films, but he's done some pretty good stuff. And we're going to find out exactly which ones of his are our favourites.
Indeed we are. And we're going to have all the other meaty goodness that you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We're going to give away a whole array of cracking prizes. And we're going to give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. Before we get into the chunks of the show, I'm obsessed with meaty chunks today.
It's a casserole of a podcast.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. And you are some chunks in that stew.
I'm a dumpling.
Where are we going with this?
I don't know.
Jesus
this is mental.
Christ. You were saying, Ben.
before we get into the show, we need to announce the winner to our Design a Logo for Skip to the End competition. Now, if you've downloaded this episode, if you're listening to it, you will have already seen the new logo because it will have gone live at the same time as the new episode. So we want to say a hearty congratulations to Jaws19 for his winning entry.
Well done!
Amazing work.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
And thank you to everyone that did submit their entries. There are some amazing, amazing designs. It was really hard to choose.
It was.
But we went with one that we feel sums us up perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you'll also be getting some Funkos, you'll be getting a Last Exit to Nowhere t-shirt, and you'll also get a surprise gift, which isn't anything meaty or anything like that,
like a stick of salami?
No, not a casserole.
Shame.
No, you're going to actually get something from Richer Sounds in the post, so we really appreciate it.
We do indeed.
Yeah.
But you're the winner, really, because you've now got to see all these people looking at your work.
Yep.
So you've benefited. You should be thanking us.
That's true.
We should do a phone-in where he says thank you. Do you know what I mean?
Like live and kicking. Yeah.
Speaking of thanking us, haven't we had something through the post from one of our listeners?
Well, yeah, just this big subtle post. We'll actually put this on Instagram in the box first so you can see just how big it is because it's insane. Yeah. But we've had a letter come through. It says, "Hello, Gemma, Mark and Ben.
Hi.
Hope you're well. Here's to 100 episodes and 4 years." So we've been a bit delayed, but you'll see why. "What she's made us is our favourite character from Spirit Away, Haku. And Gemma, this will make sense in a minute. She listened to our topic recently over the old episodes and saw that our favourite animated film of all time, all of us love Spirited Away.
Absolutely.
So she spent a lot of time stitching away and making a Skip to the End mascot for us, or like a present.
Okay.
So at the moment, these two have not seen this, and all they can see is this big box, which is literally about half the size of me.
It's massive.
It's absolutely massive. Come on, I'm losing weight. So I want to show you this because you'll be blown away.
I'm
Are
ready.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
That's so
That's
cool.
been hand-stitched from them, and they've made it for us to keep in Skip Towers.
Yeah.
But if you look how much stitch work when all this has gone into it, it's absolutely... We need to put this on social
that's
media for people to realise it.
Let's get a picture
that's
of that straight
amazing.
Away.
But that's from Charlotte and Andrew Ralph Gledhill, and I just want to say a massive thanks to both, because it's unbelievable. We get gifts in the post, but nothing like this. This has took hours. Look
that's,
at it.
That's like shop quality. That's the sort of thing you would buy from the Disney store.
I know. We're going to start... It's going to mass make them and make some serious wedge. But it's... But if anyone else wants to send us gifts, you know, get in contact, DM, email, go on skiptheend.co.uk, get our address and send us nice stuff.
We do prefer booze to stitch work, but we'll take anything.
But yeah, thank you very much for that. And yeah, I just think it's just nice to see how much time our listeners spend giving us something back.
Definitely.
So, what do we do now?
Well, how about this? Let's get started.
When you come to the Skip the End podcast, what do you expect? Love and laughter.
and bees.
So this topic is perfect. It's our top three romantic comedies, or if you're one of the cool kids, rom-coms.
Yeah, all the kids are saying that.
That's what I mean, yeah. It's none of this fam, or do you get me? It's all rom-com.
Yeah, rom-coms is peng.
Oh, that's well dank.
Are we actually still up with the kids, or is that long gone? Is that a
saying? Me and Ben are down with the kids, aren't we?
I'm not. I'm still going with like, cowabunga! Like, came up.
Don't have a cow!
So it's quite easy, really. It's our top three romantic comedies. So, Ben, you're going to struggle, but what's your first one?
Well, you'll see a theme with my three as we go through them. They're all pretty much breakthrough leading roles of their respective stars. So my first pick is Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, great choice.
It's a wonderful film starring Jason Segel, who previously was known for his TV comedy work in shows like Freaks and Geeks and bit parts in movies like Knocked Up. But this was the film that thrust him into the spotlight. He plays this slobby composer whose girlfriend dumps him, but then he goes on vacation and ends up staying at the same resort as his ex and her new boyfriend, whilst also then falling in love with the receptionist who works at the resort. It's a really good film, it's a really funny film, and Segel is so good at playing the everyman, playing slobby doofuses. That's his zone of terror, the slobby doofus. And he's such a nice guy that you can totally believe that he'd be with both Kristen Bell and Mila Kunis, despite being way out of their leagues.
Yeah, you know, just a bit.
Yeah, but because he's such a lovable chap, you can completely understand why they would have fell for him. Not only is he great, Mila Kunis is brilliant too. She's a very underrated comedic actress, which I found because I've fallen into a bit of a wormhole of watching That 70s Show on Netflix at the minute. And I've forgotten how funny she is and how funny that show is.
She's peng.
She is peng indeed. And obviously we don't need to say anything about Kristen Bell because we're all huge fans.
She's massive.
Fucking great.
She's absolutely amazing. The film is so good, in fact, that even the existence of Russell Brand cannot ruin it.
Have you just seen what I wrote here? As you said it, Russell Brand is bearable.
He is good, because his character that he's playing is a douchebag celebrity.
Yeah.
It's right in his wheelhouse. He knows exactly what he's doing there, and he does it brilliantly. And it's all the more impressive, this film, because it was Jason Segel's screenwriting debut.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, didn't just star in it, wrote it as well. It's a silly film, and it's too long. It's in need of a good edit, but what do you expect? He's good friends with Judd Apatow. Anyone in his orbit, they just put out overlong films. That's his style. But it's really funny, it's goofy, it's shaggy, it's at times farcical. It's very raunchy in places, but it's always very heartfelt, and for me, one of the best comedies of the 2000s.
I love this film, because doesn't Paul Rudd go, "He's in that, you're from London"? Yeah. It's like the funniest line ever.
It is. It's a great film, and I think I watched it on a plane or something with one of those, oh, I'll give this a go, because it looks shit. The cover looks awful. As soon as you see the name Russell Brand, I'm like, I would rather die than watch this. I fucking hate that guy. But it's a good film. It really is. And like you said, Mila Kunis is awesome.
Mila. I said Mila like 8 times and you still got it wrong.
Still. Brilliant. But I do like Mila a lot. She's cool. But she's gone away. I haven't seen her in much. She did like... What's she done recently? The same... Was Stepmoms or something like that?
Bad Moms.
Bad Moms.
I haven't seen her on the scene. She's probably just...
I think Jupiter Ascending kind of killed off a little bit of potential with her career, but she's also done some pretty good stuff. Obviously, That 70s Show, she was the voice of Meg, still is the voice of Meg in Family Guy. Yeah, I like her. I like her a lot.
I think it's because she's shat out a couple of kids recently, so she's not been doing as many roles.
Shat out, that's how you do it. Yeah. That's what the kids say.
Boom!
Shat out another kid. Right then, Gemma, what have you got?
I've got Crazy Stupid Love.
So have I.
Ooh, good shot. That was my fourth. It was so close to making my
list.
Great
choice.
It has an all-star cast including Steve Carell, Ryan Gosling, Julianne Moore and Emma Stone. And the story is about love in general. So you've got heartbreak, you've got crushes, you've got obsessions and, of course, good old casual sex. That's what we come here for.
Is it?
Bloody hell.
What time does that start?
Between 4 and 4:30.
Bloody hell.
But we focus on Carell and Moore, who are having a divorce thanks to a bit of infidelity with good old Kevin Bacon, Mr. EE himself.
That was his last good role, I think.
Well, the last EE commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
But since Crazy Stupid Love, he went to EE, didn't he?
He did. Terrible. Yeah. But there's also a son who has a very intense and hormonal crush on his babysitter. And of course, Golden Balls himself, Mr. Ryan Gosling, as a very handsome playboy hopping from one girl's bed to another. And he suddenly meets Emma Stone character Hannah. And she's the girl that he can't get into bed. He can't entice her with his wills and his incredibly sexual face and his hard rock abs and...
Sexual face.
And that's her saying it, not me.
We haven't gone to Mark yet.
I don't want to on this one.
But Emma Stone is the best and the most relatable character. She's just so dorky and so lovable, but she's also a girl who doesn't immediately fall under this pretentious spell that Gosling's trying to cast. And it was the first film they ever worked on together. Of course, they made magic on La La Land, not so much on Gangster Squad. But never mind, it's not all about that. It's about these characters developing slowly during the film. And it's a film that is actually likeable itself. It's the way how everything works together. It's delightful. And Mark, do you agree with me?
Yes, because I put it in my top three. So if I didn't,
thank
it would
bloody
be good.
God.
Be better than Gap. That's what this film's all about. I love the fact that Steve Carell just is an absolute doofus. He's really trying. Really? He'll put on a polo shirt and they're like, are you Steve Jobs? Are you Steve Jobs? Why? You've got no excuse to wear that top unless you're Steve Jobs. And the chemistry between, like you said, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, you just see. And you just, any director must have watched that film and gone, I'm getting them two in every film that I can.
Because the Dirty Dancing lift.
That's incredible.
It would work for me. Would it work for you?
When he says come and does that, Jesus, I would. But
grab him up.
No, but everything about it is good. I actually forgot it was Kevin Bacon. I actually completely forgot. But you got Julianne Moore, absolutely incredible actress.
Unreal, one of the best.
And she just has fun in it, and that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But when it all comes together at the end, there's those touching moments where you see it all link up, and then the kind of... the ball drops where you see that Steve Carell, is it Cal, did you say his name is
Cal.
In it? Yeah, he's like, you're not getting with my fucking daughter, you know what I mean? And it's just that party all kicks off and it's amazing. It's a really good film that not many people talk about.
Yeah, and they should. I like how all the separate little romances and couplings work on their own. I think my favourite is the kid with his crush on Anna Lee Tipton. I think that's a great little story. Yeah. But it's a brilliant film.
Fun fact, Anna Lee Tipton was originally a cast member from America's Next Top Model.
Indeed.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. She placed third and now she's got clearly one of the best careers out of everyone that ever appeared in it.
Did any of you ever have a babysitter you fancied?
No.
I don't know that I've ever had a babysitter.
I was just
left on my own devices.
Self-taught.
He's four. Leave him some whiskey. We'll be back in about 2 hours, mate.
I got this, Mum.
Yeah. I didn't. I was just asking, you know, nothing personal.
Oh, okay.
But, so we both agreed on that one. And it's
definitely
back to Ben. Let's get out of this one straight away.
Yeah. Well, from one Emma Stone film to another, Easy A.
Oh, what a film.
So, again, it was her breakthrough role. After co-starring in some successful movies like Superbad and Zombieland, this was her breakthrough performance as a leading actor. She plays Olive, a high school girl who gets an unfair reputation as a slut, so she decides to lean into it and pretend that she is one, to just to fuck over all the people who've been bullying her. She's so cool and she is so charming, and it was obvious even then that she was going to be one of the biggest stars in the planet, and she is. She's won an Oscar now. She has great chemistry in the film with the object of her affection, played by Penn Badgley. But to be fair, Emma Stone, I think, would have great chemistry with a pine cone because she's just a chemistry machine.
Yeah.
She's just wonderful. But I think my favourite parts of the film, other than Emma Stone, are her parents.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Her chilled out, silly parents, played by Stanley Tucci and Patricia Clarkson. They're so funny and they have a great relationship with their daughter. They're the ideal parents, aren't they?
That's who you want.
Yeah.
Not that I don't love my own parents, but Stanley Tucci is one of my favourite actors.
Yes.
And he's never plays the same role. No. He's very, very different in everything he does. And in that, he's like the dude, isn't he?
He's
just
a good
so
lad.
Cool.
So chilled. As well as the film being based loosely on 19th century novel The Scarlet Letter, it was also clearly something of an homage to the works of John Hughes. You can see a lot of that within there. There are references within the film to Ferris Bueller and 16 Candles, among others. Something I read about this film the other day as well is that... Emma Stone actually dropped out of appearing in Sucker Punch to be in this film instead.
Oh.
Best thing that ever she did.
That's one of your correct decisions there, isn't it?
Yeah.
The winner of the Oscar for La La Land and also Sucker Punch.
No.
The reason why it's so important that she was the star of this film is because a lot of the film is her talking directly at the camera. She has those kind of video diaries. And you can only get away with that if you are a charismatic, magnetic screen presence. If you don't have that, people aren't going to care that you're aimed directly at you, you know. But because she has all those skills, she just wins everything. She just owns the film. It's brilliant.
Do you know what I like about that film as well? Like, you know when the cast of Friends are in something else, they're always Joey, they're always Rachel. Phoebe's in it.
Yeah.
And she's the first time I've not looked at her and gone, oh, you're not Phoebe, because she's that headmistress that's kind of having an affair and she's cheating on, what's his name from Spider-Man?
Sandman.
Sandman. greatest villain of all time. That's always going to haunt me. But she's not Phoebe in it. For the first ever time, she's not Phoebe. Yes, yeah. I could look at her and think, actually, you aren't just being that same person.
Mm-hmm.
But
I agree.
Yeah. I forgot she's in it. Yeah.
I love her when she starts singing along to the card for like hours in London in the evening, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Like from her grandmother. It's like, oh, it's really annoying. All of a sudden,
it's a great film.
It is.
It's fun.
Right. Okay. Next one. Please don't have another one of mine. Here we go.
Well, let's find out. I'm going to France. Amelie.
No.
Oh, lovely.
Great film there.
Yeah. Whimsical French rom-com starring Audrey Tautou as the Amelie herself. And it's shot in a really beautiful and dreamlike state where Amelie wants to help others find love and happiness, but often neglects herself.
Oh, imagine.
But all that changes one day when she spots a young man called Nino, a chap who likes to collect ripped up photographs from kiosks. And then she kind of goes into a bit of a tailspin because she's never experienced love. She's always been very analytical about remembering little details about other people. But what follows is a really beautiful exchange between the pair. So it's not a traditional love story. They don't start meeting up and talking and innocently flirting. It's a series of fleeting moments that they have. You know, it involves Amelie hatching a plan to get him to notice her while being a very shy and painful introvert, you know, creating a treasure hunt around the Sacré-Cœur, having posters plastered all over a train station to invite him to contact her whilst dressed up as Zorro, and of course the seduction on the ghost train when she buys the ticket, sits into the little cart, waits for him to start scaring her. But even the whole woo into her ear, there's just something so beautiful and so it's like sparks, fireworks just being lit all around them. It's just a lovely, innocent film shot through a really beautiful kind of yellow tint, mm-hmm. So it doesn't almost feel like it's very real life. And hell, you know, it's even cute when she's wondering how many people are having an orgasm in France. You know, you get all like these series of women going, oh, and then that little one at the end going, oh, which is my favourite one.
It is a very good film because it's insufferably twee, which normally puts me off, but the film is so good around that I can live with it.
Yeah, because as I was watching it for research purposes, halfway through I thought it's not really a film about love, but it's not all about that. It's about the people around her, how she wants to help them find happiness, mm-hmm. and happiness is often in the form of love, and when she does find it out for herself, Oh, indeed.
It is literally one of the most beautiful films ever made. And considering it's now about 15, 20 years old, nothing looks as good as it. I can't believe how old it is.
Yeah.
And when I was at uni, I watched this because we were doing like this film studies module for the media. And I watched it and they gave me that, Delicatessen, and City of the Lost Children. Three of the best French films you're ever going to see. Chuck in La Haine as well, and that's your
yes.
day. That's the best day you're ever going to have for French films. But it's the sort of film that I imagine Tim Burton would be doing if he wasn't just doing any old shit with Johnny Depp anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
He should do that. It's a bit like Del Toro meets Burton, and they get it right.
I'm thinking if Burton ever didn't get his heart broken in the past, he would be making films like this.
Yeah, and start sucking off Johnny Depp every time. But do you know if
not
he
literally.
Didn't? No.
Metaphorically.
Yes, of course. But do you know what I mean? It's depressing because that's how you make a beautiful film.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't Audrey Tautou remind you of like Audrey Hepburn back
Absolutely.
In the day?
Oh. She has that old Hollywood vibe.
Oh, she's beautiful, not just in physicality, but also the character she's played. She's just mesmerising.
It's dreamy.
To watch. Dreamy.
I bloody love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an incredible choice. What a beautiful choice so far.
Yes.
Brilliant. Mine is Elizabethtown by Cameron Crowe.
Mm.
And
okay.
I don't think either of you have seen it.
No. Yet.
And you never will. Look at Ben's face.
You're the only person I know who likes it.
And
I'm
that's
sure
why
it got
I bring
terrible
it.
Reviews.
It got like 6.1 on IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes, it's like 26%.
Masterpiece.
And it's only me doing the 10-star ratings again and again under everyone I know to try and get it up there. But it made the reason I like this film so much is it made Orlando Bloom bearable.
Okay.
And any film that can do that deserves a mention on Skip to the End. Mm. But also Kirsten Dunst. If you don't know the film, basically, he has the death of his father, goes back to his hometown, meets this stewardess who's called Claire, and the love just blossoms. But it's all about Cameron Crowe putting probably his previous experience in life, which he does, into a script and a screenplay, and then making this film work. So it's all about how what route you take in love, and in life kind of the trips you make out of it. And obviously when it's Cameron Crowe, you get the best soundtrack ever. So you get Tom Petty, you get all the classics. But this film is really, really good. And it's actually just genuine. You know when you watch a lot of films and they're romantic, like Bridget Jones, it's like, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
This is not real. This isn't relationships of ordinary people. It's all bullshit. That posh wanker always turning up and trying to get Bridget back.
Hey, my life story.
But it's the fact that someone enters the life and you just know. And that's it. You see this chemistry between the two. And this is why I don't understand why it gets all these bad kind of reviews and everyone rips it to pieces. you believe they're in love. You believe that they just know and that everything suddenly changes when they enter each other's life. And it's fucking good. It's a really good film that not many people would watch. No one's going to listen to this and watch it. They'll take on. They're going to do a Ben. But please do, because it's a brilliant, brilliant film and one of Cameron Crowe's best. Actually, it might be his last good one.
I kind of want to watch it now because I want to know if all the reviewers who say it's terrible are correct and if you've just lost your fucking marbles. or if it's genuinely like a hidden masterpiece. I'm intrigued.
I don't want to say masterpiece.
That's a first time for everything.
Because that's hard. But you will watch it and you'll relate to previous relationships or experiences or times that you've questioned stuff or times that you meet people and think, God, I absolutely want to spend the rest of my life with them. And he puts it into a context where it's believable. It's not Disney World. It's not this fairyland tale. It's real. And it's a bloody good film. And it's beautiful. And if you can like Orlando Bloom from it, fuck me, he's done good.
I like how you kind of presented it, actually. I think you've done a really strong case. And I would like
get a gold star? No, this is McDonald's?
But I like the fact that you are quite passionate about this film. And I like that whenever I hear people, you know, give recommendations. You know, I do want to check it out because I have heard in the past that, you know, it's not all bad. I also quite like Kirsten Dunst too.
Yeah, she's great in it. Mm. And she's just adorable. Yeah. And the chemistry between the two are up there with La La Land. It's absolutely awesome.
No, I will check it out.
Ben will never do it. And I don't expect you to.
I do want to, but I won't. I just know I'll never get around to it.
No.
I make no promises.
What's your final one, dude?
And so then the final one of my films making stars out of their lead actors, it's 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So it was the film that undoubtedly made Steve Carell a star. Prior to that, he was known for being in The Office, of course, and also as one of the correspondents on The Daily Show. Carell plays Andy, a toy-obsessed store clerk whose colleagues are astounded to find out that he's still a virgin at the age of 40. They try unsuccessfully to get him laid until he finally meets the woman of his dreams. It was a great move from Carell to do this film because it shows his comedic range, because the character of Andy is so different to the character of Michael Scott in The Office. Andy is kind-hearted and reserved, whereas Michael Scott is a fool, a blustery idiot. And so it's nice that Carell was showing that he can do other things. And since then, obviously, he's gone on to do a hell of a lot more, including dramatic roles.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see him branch out in different comedic roles back at the start of his career. Again, as we've said so many times in this topic, chemistry is the key. Carell is absolutely wonderful with Catherine Keener, who plays Trish, the woman who eventually takes his V-card. He also has great chemistry with Kat Dennings, who plays Trish's daughter. She's kind of your typical angsty, emotional teenage girl. But one of the pleasures from the film is how quickly she warms to him. You think she's just going to hate him. Why would she be interested in this doofus? But she really likes him, especially after he takes her to the... It's kind of like the family planning clinic, isn't it? And helps her out there. It's a great cast as well as those guys. Obviously, Carell, Keener. You've also got Seth Rogen in it in one of his earlier roles. Jane Lynch, who's one of the best comedic actresses in the game. And the great Paul Rudd, who should just be in absolutely everything. And a really funny turn from Leslie Mann as well, who's a vastly underrated actress.
That whole sequence when she's in the car absolutely battered out of her mind and she starts rapping along to Get Your Freak On by Missy Elliott.
Yeah.
I'm so drunk. I need some French toast.
French
toast.
It's one of the most endlessly rewatchable comedies of all time. It's one of them that if it's on TV, and it is on TV a lot, it's another ITV2 job. It's always on, but you never flick past it. You always end up watching it because it's just worth it. There are some scenes as well that really live in the memory. Think about the waxing scene when he's getting his chest waxed.
Kelly Clarkson.
Cocksucker, motherfucker!
Didn't they really do that?
Yeah, that's legit. That's not CGI, man. That's his hair being ripped out at the roots with hot wax.
That's absolutely...
On his nipples.
It's horrible. You cringe watching that and you think, how could they actually make it look so real?
Because it is. Yeah, absolutely. And then you've got the big musical number at the end as well.
Let the sunshine.
That's great. I love that. And then my favourite character in the whole thing is Mooj. When Mooj is talking about things like butthole pleasures and rusty trombones and shit-stained balls. Everything that comes out of his mouth is absolute gold. Love that film.
I really fancy watching that now, actually.
Yeah.
Sometimes when we do these topics, I genuinely want to stop recording and just think, I just want to go and watch these films.
Yeah.
It's tough. But we're going to carry on for the listeners.
Okay.
Oh, yes. We'll tough it out.
Okay.
We'll tough it out.
Okay. Aquarius.
Also, one of my favourite scenes on that whole film is when they're sitting there playing gaming and they're saying, you're more gay than Coldplay.
Yes!
You're more gay than this. Do you know how you're gay? Because you like Coldplay. And that is just, I know that, you know that Seth and, what's his name, Ant-Man, the Mac and
Paul
Me
Rudd.
Fan, Paul Rudd, the two of them are just literally improvising.
Yeah.
They are coming up with the most gay thing that they can and just offing each other. And I fucking love that scene.
It's funny, isn't it? Because that wouldn't be in a film now.
No.
They wouldn't put that in a film now because it'd offend too many people. And it is offensive.
I took a lot of offence.
Yeah.
Gemma, your final choice.
My last choice is the Farrelly Brothers' There's Something About Mary.
Oh, what a great choice.
Yeah. A beautiful woman called Mary and the many attempts of weirdos trying to win her heart. That does not scream rom-com to you, then get out of town. The film fuses gross-out comedy with romanticism, and it came across, funnily enough, as a real positive and sweet piece of material at the same time. Mm. Nobody expected to fall in love with a guy who got his knob zipped up at the beginning of the film. But Diaz plays Mary as such a kind and caring soul. You know, she's the girl you want to be with. She's the girl you want to be mates with. You just want to be around with her all the time. You know, she's really a wonderful piece of person.
Piece of person.
I don't know where I was going with that. But these guys that are trying to win her heart. So Ben Stiller is, of course, the guy who fell in love with her at school, and he wants to fall in love with her again. So he hires a private detective played wonderfully by Matt Dillon, who's just
the best.
He's just this creepy douchebag. You know, he's just so slimy. But Mary falls for him because he spies on her so much, he starts doing the things that she would like in a guy. And it's just the whole film is just, you shouldn't really like this film because, you know, when your main marketing piece is getting jizz in Mary's hair just to stand up on a quiff, then, you know, you're going to start asking questions. But it is just a lovely, lovely film. There's great chemistry between both Ben Stiller and Cameron Diaz. Hell, there's even great chemistry between Matt Dillon and Cameron Diaz, who were dating at the time.
Mm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, they were. But you've also got Brit comedian Lee Evans, who plays a guy...
Oh, so funny.
Who plays a guy who pretends that he's, you know, he's disabled, he has to have crutches, he's from, you know, he's from England, he's a professor, but in reality he's just some fucking loser.
Pizza delivery boy.
Yeah, who lives down the street with a real sort of accent to him. But it's a film that I've not seen in a while, but it never fails to put a smile on my face. It's just such a hilarious film.
It's another one of those, like we just mentioned, that's incredibly un-PC and probably wouldn't be made now. But there the bit when I think Mary first asks the PI what he does when he's pretending to be someone else, and he says, "I work with retards."
That's it.
Fucking hell.
Oh my God.
And he has this big shit-eating grin on his face with those big fake teeth he's had put in. Jesus.
It's weird how much of that got kind of over the line back then. It just wasn't. Oh, yeah. No one was as kind of easily offended.
Yeah.
You just couldn't get it now. Yeah. Like every time his brother takes off his headphones, he's kind of, he throws
with his
this
baseball.
Fit. Yeah.
Have you seen my baseball?
Yeah. Brilliant. And I love the dog
beans,
as well.
Frank and beans.
That scene when you actually see the penis and it actually goes through, that is unbearable. I can't watch that. Yeah. It's horrible. It's too realistic. It's true.
Yeah.
Horrible. As a bloke, honestly, Jim, you'll never understand me.
You can't
watch that. It's
really grim.
It's gross.
So it would hurt?
Oh, just a tad.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Horrible.
Oh, dear.
We got a bleeder.
Put the Frank over the beans.
God, my final one, again, Ben's going to absolutely hate it. Unlike the brother's cider he's just opened. Serendipity. And I don't think you would have seen it.
Oh, shit. Is that John Cusack
it
and
is.
Julia Roberts?
And Kate Beckinsale.
I have seen it many, many moons ago.
It's actually quite good. It's all about leaving love to fate and seeing if they're meant to be. And it's actually a really good film. When I think of John Cusack, I always think of love stories. There's stuff like Say Anything and stuff like that. You see him holding up that iconic boombox. But this is the film I think that him and Kate have the best chemistry. It's all about them meeting and having this instant attraction. And then basically she leaves it down to fate. It's a little bit far-fetched because she gets this book and writes her number and says, "I will leave it in a charity shop. If you find it, we're meant to be." And you see all these occasions in New York when they kind of meet up and they nearly almost get into each other's past, but they don't. They're both in relationships they don't want to be in. They're going to get married. They don't want it to happen. But the chemistry between the two is brilliant. And it's just one of those feel-good films that you want to watch in the winter, like Home Alone, like these Christmas films. It's all set at Christmas, so you want to go shopping and have hot chocolate and all this. It's a great, great film, and not enough people give it credit because everyone talks about Say Anything or Kate Beckinsale being in Underworld.
Underworld. It's a terrible film.
Or 15 of them.
Yeah, you shouldn't be remembered for that. You should be remembered for these good films. The soundtrack's great. It's got loads of sort of Nat King Cole and all the old classic swing stuff. It's just a really good, feel-good film from start to finish, and I think, Gemma, you'd really enjoy it. It's got this really nice story that I don't want to ruin it with my tasteless way, but it's got a very nice happy ending. And I know Ben will, if you have seen it, you don't even remember it. So that's
no.
I genuinely thought you were going to say, and you know Ben likes a happy ending.
No. But
but yeah, don't rush out to see it. Okay. But I think
that's exactly what I was going to do.
Yeah.
Stop me. Hold me back.
Come back and sit down. But it's a brilliant, brilliant film.
Okay. Take your word for it.
Anyone on social
Good.
Media?
No, I mean,
as
I said, I did see it, and I do remember thinking that it was all right. It didn't offend me.
You didn't turn it off, so that's a good start. You put on Predator or something.
I'll give it a go.
Good. What social media come up with?
Well, Twitter. Rob Shepherd at Red Bizzle said, "The Wedding Singer."
Great choice.
When Harry Met Sally. Mm-hmm. It's one of those sort of classic rom-coms, isn't it?
I have been to the deli in New York where the famous I'll Have What She's Having scene takes place. Cat's Deli, yeah.
Oh, bloody hell.
And didn't you spend like 15 quid on a sandwich?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, pastrami. Oh, it was
totally
the good
it.
Shit. Yeah.
Worth every penny.
Yep. Yeah.
And also said Knocked Up.
I thought you might have that, Ben.
Yeah.
I thought that.
It's because I had Forgetting Sarah Marshall and 40-Year-Old Virgin. It would have been three films that are basically the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Insert spooky name here at CineGeek18 said The Big Sick.
Yeah,
good
very
film.
Good.
Brilliant. Crazy Rich Asians.
Haven't seen it yet.
It is fantastic.
Okay.
It really, really great fun. And Sleepless in Seattle.
Classic.
So it's two totally different reactions.
I hate that. Sleepless in Seattle and You've Got Mail can get fucked.
Mandy LLAP at Amanda Thelwell said The Proposal. Some Ryan Reynolds, Sandra
Bullock.
Yeah,
I love Sandra Bullock.
I've never seen that one.
It's a good film.
While You Were Sleeping. Another Bullockian film. And Runaway Bride.
I don't know Runaway Bride.
It was kind of seen as sort of Richard Gere and Juliet Roberts' next hurrah after Pretty Woman.
Oh, right. Missed that one.
Then we're moving over to Facebook. Emma Dickinson said Clueless.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you might have that, Jen.
Me too, but I didn't. Empire Records and Pretty Woman.
I bloody love Empire Records.
I don't know if I've seen it.
Oh, it's a great film.
You will love it.
No, you won't.
I think he will.
He hates stuff like Dazed and Confused.
Oh, yeah. You,
is it a grungy 90s?
Yeah, don't
like
bother.
Singles.
Yeah. Don't bother. Yeah, don't bother. Funnily enough, you just said that. Chris Chubb said Singles.
There you go.
The Princess Bride and Amelie.
Yeah, all good.
Then over to Steve Mannion, who said Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Wow.
It's kind of an anti-rom-com.
There's no comedy in there.
And I mean, continuing with the theme, 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, bleak.
Brutal.
Honest.
And Shaun of the Dead, the zom-rom-com.
Yep.
Yeah, you get it over life.
Yeah. Then finally, we have an email.
Nice.
What?
Old school.
Pigeon Post. Holly. She said Frankie and Johnny.
I've still not seen that.
Don't know.
Al Pacino
it?
And Michelle Pfeiffer about a waitress falling in love with a guy called Johnny.
Oh, that's a surprise.
Can't remember the rest of it. But
over a Dunkachino.
There we go. Elizabeth Town.
Yes, someone else in the world has seen it.
Fucking hell.
Mark has just flipped his shit.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Right. Hold on to something, Ben.
Oh, no.
The third choice is Serendipity.
Yes.
Oh, my Lord. Hold on. How the fuck did you not have Chasing Amy?
Yeah.
Because someone on Twitter went, as if Mark's not going to have Chasing Amy. And I was like, okay, I won't.
So just out of pettiness, you decided not to have one of your favourite films of all time.
Okay. Silently crosses it out.
I don't want it that they're always right.
Well, thank you very much, guys, and keep them coming.
So, whose topic choice is it next?
It's mine. I fancy celebrating those arseholes, the ones that really sort of push you around, and it's really unfair. On the next episode, we're going to be talking about our top three bullies in films.
Nice. Ooh, I love it.
We've been to our local View cinema to watch Venom, the latest Marvel offering directed by Ruben Fleischer and starring Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams and Riz Ahmed. When Eddie Brock investigates strange goings-on at the Life Foundation laboratories, he obtains the powers of an alien symbiote that calls itself Venom. Perfect timing, considering that CEO, Carlton Drake, is wanting to combine these life forms with humans as part of an experiment for the future of the world. Eddie and Venom must work as a team to stop this from happening. Shame.
Is that what was that happened? Wow, I didn't realise while watching it.
So, Mark, I want to throw this over to you.
Awful. Just get to the point. Awful story, bad jokes, bad CGI, bad acting. It failed in every way. Action was too crap. Plot was shit. Rushed. Cash grab. Tom Hardy should know better. Wank. Move on.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Ben.
So I didn't think that it would be possible to see another film this year as bad as The Predator, and then Venom comes along and says, hold my beer.
Or hold my brother's cider.
Yeah. It's every bit as bad as the trailers made it seem. It's a relic of the pre-MCU Marvel days when all their films were utter shite. It is like a hybrid of Ghost Rider and something like Spawn. And I love Spawn, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
But it's very much of its time, which was 20 fucking years ago. It's garbage. Utter shit.
Gemma.
I wish we went to see A Star Is Born.
Yes. Mm.
I really do. It's nothing special. It's, in fact, a bit of a joke. Tom Hardy. I didn't understand half a word he was saying.
Oh, Mumbly Tom.
Mumbly Tom, yep. I like the fact that he flipped from Brooklyn to English to Irish to Spanish at one point. Michelle Williams was cruelly, cruelly robbed of a decent role. Now, I understand it's not about her, but come on, guys. Give her a bit of something to work with. I honestly thought Tom Hardy was channeling the values and ethics of Mr. Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, Ghost Rider, man. It's Ghost Rider 3.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
No.
Let's stick with Hardy then. He's just so wrong for the part. Yeah. He can't play comedy. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go off on a tangent on that for the minute. Why the fuck was this a comedy?
Yeah.
The Venom character, they could have made an almost horror superhero movie out of this, and they went down the easiest route possible, which was as a shitty comedy, which they shouldn't have done. It doesn't work. But especially because Tom Hardy can't play comedy. He's too intense to play comedic roles, and it just doesn't work. None of the supposed jokes he made landed at all. It's mm-mm. fucking terrible.
I found that people were laughing at the wrong points.
Yeah.
This was not an intentionally funny film, but people were laughing at the points that shouldn't have been funny at all. It's frustrating to actually watch. You'd think he's done roles like Legend. He's done, obviously, Bane from The Dark Knight Rises. So why on earth is he fumbling? And the one thing that really pissed me off, actually, about this film, he had his hand over his mouth so many times.
Yeah.
Act like a fucking professional actor and act. I mean, Jesus Christ, we're not at preschool. We're not at theatre school. We're not. This is, he gets the bunts to play these amazing characters.
Yeah. He needs to enunciate. Speak clearly.
I mean, fucking hell.
I can't comment on speaking clearly, but it's just, he should do better. You know, he was in Dunkirk. He's in some classic films in the last couple of years. I don't understand why. And I've read a few things where a lot of the film's being cut and some of the great scenes we've not seen. Bullshit. That's just getting out of prison. Yeah. You know this film's wank. That's why you're not doing much press. I've not seen him on many talk shows. I've not seen him doing all these big press junkets. He's probably embarrassed. He's probably going, what the fuck is that? Watched it back and went, this is awful. It doesn't matter if they've cut 40 minutes. You should have cut the whole fucking thing and not bothered and just abolished it, because it's, as a horror, it failed. As a comedy, it failed. It's just tarnished the name. And we all hoped that maybe Venom would be good after Spider-Man 3 when it was wank. And it's probably worse.
It's absolutely atrocious. Let's just stick with the actors for a minute, because there's so many other things that are wrong with it that we'll come to. But Riz Ahmed as well as the villain. I love Riz Ahmed. I think he's a great actor. He was sleepwalking through this. He put no effort in.
No.
He didn't seem remotely villainous. He's supposed to be the main villain of the piece. Well, lean into it then, pal. Act like one.
Yeah.
Shit.
I didn't feel threatened whatsoever.
No.
Even when he started fusing with that other symbiote, like there was no danger to it. It didn't feel like he was commanding the stage. He wasn't commanding his presence being felt. It just felt really, really flat.
Yeah, and Michelle Williams, why was she slumming it in this? She's a four-time Oscar nominee, and she hasn't done something this shit since Dawson's Creek.
I was too busy distracted by a wig.
Yeah, it was always sort of combed back weirdly at the top.
It looked
very odd, very fake.
You shouldn't be focusing on somebody's hair follicles. You should be focusing on the presence of the screen. And why? Why should I have to be watching intensely at her hairline? It's not fair.
Do you not feel frustrated and angry that actress, who's so good and got so many good names on her IMDb page, just slums it now?
Yeah.
It's like Riz. You just look at them and think, you've just shat on something you were doing so well at.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Look at Nightcrawler. He was awesome.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely
so good
awesome. And he's up there with our good friend Jakey Boy. And he does this. And at no point did I see him as a threat. And even when they did have their battle, I blinked. And it was over.
Yeah, I went for a piss, didn't I? Just as the battle started, thinking, oh, it's fine, this is going to rage for a good 15, 20 minutes. And I got back, and all of a sudden, the other symbiote is dead. What? Where was the actual fucking finale?
Shambles.
I had a problem with that fight, because you could not watch a thing. I couldn't see a thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't see, you know, who was delivering a punch, who was delivering a blow, who was receiving the hit. I couldn't actually make out what was happening on in front of me. Now, the whole fight of that sequence, and not just that, but the motorcycle sequence, that's all shot at night.
Yeah.
Did they shoot that at night, quote unquote, because the effects were so bad that if they did it in the daytime, all of their flaws would be exposed?
Possibly. Do you know what? The symbiote and the suit looked like it was made of flubber.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was shit. I was like, where's Robin Williams?
Yeah.
And that was what, like 20 years ago?
Yeah, if not more.
And the CGI, I think, looks worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the pacing.
Oh.
Boring. You should be
that
opening
first
up.
Half hour.
Yeah. You should open up a superhero film with real guts and bluster. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be sleepwalking.
I know. It was atrocious. And why did they make the Venom character into this sarky dickhead? Do you know who he reminded me of? Reminded me of Ultron. Remember how fucking annoying Ultron was? He should have been a badass villain, but he was a sarky little quipping prick. Same thing with Venom. What's that about?
Yeah, like a dark version of the mask.
It doesn't work.
No. It's like Michael Bay come along and went, let's do it like the Transformers, offensive people, these robots that just are doing these really bad jokes. And then when he's arguing with him, honestly, you know, sometimes when you record, you get in a mood and then you get angry and frustrated. And you know that luckily there's some good stuff coming up. This just frustrates me because we wasted 2 hours of our lives.
Yeah, yeah, we did. One of the things that really wound me up, I cannot stand when a film sets up rules only to break its own rules, to shit over its own internal logic. So they say at the start of the film that these symbiotes can't link to everyone. That's why they have to do these human trials to find people that they actually link to. And we see them try and link with humans and the humans automatically die. Okay, fine, you've set that rule then. Then all of a sudden, there's the old Vietnamese woman, it connects with her, fine. There's Michelle Williams, it connects with her, fine. It connects with Riz Ahmed, fine. It connects with the little blonde girl, fine. It connects with a fucking dog, fine. So don't tell me there's a rule where it doesn't connect with people, they always die, and then have it connect with every fucker in the film!
And a dog.
Mental.
But what I want to know is, did we like it?
Well,
it's one of the worst films I've seen of the year. It's probably one of the worst films I've seen in 5 years. I've seen people going, well, it's the critics that are saying it's awful, but the general public love it, and it's getting 8 out of 10 and 9 out of 10 from actual fans, but it's the critics that are just trying to be cool and hate it. If you're one of those people that loved it, tweet us, because I want to know what I missed.
Yes, ditto. Yeah.
And that's not being like, oh, Mark, I don't know better. These listeners know better than me. But I just want to know, because there was no tension. The acting was absolutely abysmal from actors that are bloody good. It's not like they're people we've never heard of before. And it makes Ghost Rider look like a classic.
Yeah, it does. Can someone answer this question for me as well? Why did Venom all of a sudden go from not liking Tom Hardy and wanting to take over the world to all of a sudden deciding he was Tom Hardy's best mate and wanting to save the world? I didn't see the character development happen. He just switched. He just changed his mind with no build up or logic or reasoning.
Wasn't it when he dived into the waters and then he got out the other side and went, I like you?
Mental. Ugh.
I mean, what? Did he give him his last Twix, or what happened?
I'm sick of this.
I'm sick of it. And do you know, it's destroying it at the box office at the minute. In America, I believe that it's got the biggest October opening weekend of all time, something like that.
Until Halloween in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's about to say, I think it's going to be
abysmal.
Sick.
Ugh, that means we get Venom 2.
Oh, there's definitely going to be a Venom 2. We didn't stay for the post-credits sequence, did we? Because we couldn't be arsed, but I've read what happens, and they're setting up a Carnage film, essentially.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Nice. Sorry, we should have done a spoiler alert, but fuck. Yeah. we've done you a service, frankly, by spoiling it for you.
I'm tired of this. You guys want to wrap it up? Go on, Mark.
3 out of 10.
Ben?
Well, I gave Predator 3, and I think this is worse. This is not as annoying as Predator, but it's not even as good as that. Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 2.
I wish Gaga came on the set. 3. 3 out of 10. So, as you can probably guess, Venom gets a skip to the end. 3 out of 10.
It's competition time! And if you'd listened to our last episode, which was The Predator, you'd have heard many competitions to win many great prizes. So let's kick things off and announce some winners. We started the last episode by giving away a set of Funko Pops for Predator. It was a Fugitive Predator and the Predator Hound. The Predator. And what we said was, who directed The Predator? So Ben?
Shane Black.
It is. And we're giving those prizes to Daniel Brooks. Well done on those. And when you get them in the post, put up a photo to show that you are happy. And if you're not happy because you watch the film, sell them, eBay them, do whatever you need to do. Secondly, our good friends from Last Exit to Nowhere came along and gave us a t-shirt for the original Predator, the good Predator that we still hold on to and remember as a classic. And we said to win one of their t-shirts, who directed the original Predator? Gemma?
John McTiernan.
It is. And Philip Hand will be getting that in the post. As you chose the rewatch, Gemma, we had a Rocky t-shirt, which was Mighty Mixed Tea. Really simple question. Ben, who plays Rocky in the film Rocky?
Sylvester Stallone.
It is. And at Footy and Flicks, we'll be getting that in the post. Our good friends from Richard Sounds came along with a Amazon Echo Dot with a smart Wi-Fi plug. And we said, what podcast would you listen to via Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn Radio if you won this dot? Well, who would you listen to, Jem?
Skip to the End.
Good. And Jim Reed agrees with you. Good. So he'll be getting that in the post.
Right answer.
Finally, one of our best prizes we've ever given away was a Bob Ross Pez. You know what I mean? And what we'll do, we'll get at Asda and buy some extra Pezzes so you've got loads to keep. It's only a quid. I saw them the other day. Yeah, it was really simple. We said, what was it he paints in his forests? Really simple. What was it, Jem?
It's a happy little tree.
It's a happy tree. And Anne-Marie Scollin on email. Email is the new way to win stuff.
It is, totally.
We'll be getting that Bob Ross Pez in the post. We don't stop here, and we've got a whole bunch of new competitions to give some awesome prizes away. Starting with our good friends at Funko, they've given us a set of four Funkos for Venom. So there's a Venom, a Carnage, a Venomized Captain America, and an Iron Man bundle. And we've got two of these to give away. So who plays Venom in the film we've just reviewed? Really, really simple. Also, we've got some Clockwork Orange Funko Pops.
Oh, that's wow. Cool. I didn't know they did them.
Yes. Let's say who directed Clockwork Orange. Really simple. And we've got three of those to give away.
Right, hang on.
Yes.
Me, you, yeah. Ben.
We could probably sort that.
We're winners, lads.
Our good friends from Last Exit to Nowhere have come along, and they've made it a bit different this time. Because they've got a whole new range of t-shirts, they're always bringing new stuff to the table. They've said, choose your own. So you have the opportunity to win a prize, and you get to choose your own t-shirt from their whole back cat. So all I want people to do is just tweet us which t-shirt you want, and we'll pick a couple of people at random, and they'll get to choose whatever one they want. I like that, because there's so many good ones on their site, and we always get new ones.
Yeah.
It's all good. And finally, our friends at Richard Sounds have given us a Polk Signal Solo soundbar. They don't get easy to say. What blockbuster would you watch first if you had this incredible soundbar to enhance the sound and make it all like a cinema? I want to know, what's your favourite blockbuster? Tweet us, Facebook, Instagram, email, go on skiptotheend.co.uk. That's the best way to enter all our competitions, and we'll announce the winners in 2 weeks' time.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of a pot, which is a director, and we talk about our favourite movies from that director. On the last episode, we picked out Mr. David O. Russell. So Ben, I want to throw this to you first. Please tell me your favourite David O. Russell film.
For me, it has to be American Hustle.
Great choice.
It's a brilliant film, and for me, the closest that a film has come to Goodfellas in the last 25 years, it has that same kind of vibe for me. It's cool, it's funny, it's vibrant, and it has an absolutely stellar cast. Bradley Cooper, Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro. Come on now. That is a murderous row of
talent.
It's yeah, awesome.
Absolutely. One of the things that makes David O. Russell so special is he has an uncanny ability to get actors nominated for Oscars. He's the only director in history to have had Oscar nominations in all four acting categories twice. So he did it initially with Silver Linings Playbook. Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro and Jackie Weaver were all nominated that year. And then he did it again with American Hustle for Bale, Adams, Cooper and Lawrence.
Bloody hell.
His real genius lies in hiring the right people, coupling them with the right material, and then drawing from them award-worthy performances. He's a true actor's director. He knows all about performance and how to get those performances out of them. And the best combination of all of those things for me is this. It's American Hustle. Magnificent movie.
It is such a fun film. Mm-hmm. And a great soundtrack to be with it too.
The whole
bit when Jennifer Lawrence is doing her housework with her marigolds on and is just really kicking it with Live and Let Die. So good.
I love the film, and I'm glad it got all the awards and kind of recognition it deserved, because, again, it wasn't one that everyone was talking about. Yeah. It was one of those ones. I know, Ben, you... It's really good that we're masturbating over him now, because you love everything he's done.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Did he do the Mop film?
He did, yeah.
So
joy.
We'll forget about that. Yeah. But that brought no joy to anyone's life. But it's great, and I love Christian Bale in this film.
Yes.
And his gut.
His big fat belly. And his comb over.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm sorry to digress, but have you seen the new trailer for his new film?
Digest. That's you mean digress?
Digress.
Digest.
Bless.
I've done quite well today.
Yes, I have seen the trailer for Vice. It looks amazing.
I love that you can't recognise him at all. Yeah. He's incredible.
Yeah. Sign of a good actor.
I want to see that film as a skip trip.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, great film. And if I can like Jennifer Lawrence, he's done well.
Yeah.
I don't like her.
I can't allow myself to.
I don't know how you can't like her. She's amazing.
I think there's too many roles in too short time.
You're right. She spreads herself too thin. Certainly true.
Like Marmite. Or cheese spread.
What was that film we saw? Red Sparrow.
Yeah.
Oh.
She spread herself a lot in that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Mark, your choice, please.
Silver Lining Playbook.
Okay.
Great film.
I thought it was great. It's a very good look on the life of someone with bipolar. It's quite respectful. It's about two damaged souls who help each other heal. It's no sappiness. It's no silly. It's definitely not a romantic film. It's quite bleak. My God, where do I start with this one? Bradley Cooper's finest role, in my opinion. I think it's up there as one of his absolute finest. We've just talked about her. Jennifer Lawrence, I like her in that a lot. And when they're up against people like Robert De Niro, again, killing it. Scene after scene, he gets the right cast. And Ben, like you said, he casts the people he trusts. And they trust him in his judgment. And they just deliver the best performance after best performance after best performance. Yeah. And you get attached to the characters they play. And I feel for him. And he goes back to live with his parents to try and heal because of his ex-wife, and he meets Tiffany, and she's got more problems than him. Mm-hmm. And they help each other out, and they have this chemistry which is like nothing else I've seen on screen. It's not one that you want to be in. You're not like, oh, I wish I could be like that. But you feel for them, and the characters really shine through, and it's quite a feel-good film at times, but it also reminds you that not every romance and not every life and not people with mental health, they have a struggle, mm-hmm. and every day is tough. And that's why there's no sappiness in this film at all. It's a tough watch, but it's a bloody good film, and I think it's one I like to go back to now and then. And when I do, it reminds me of just how great everything can be.
The key word of this episode has been chemistry, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The chemistry between Cooper and Lawrence is off the charts. It's why they keep doing films together, because they're wonderful together. The other person who I love in this, what's the name of the dude from the Rush Hour films?
Oh, Chris Tucker.
Yeah, yes. Chris Tucker's in it. He's great. Well, he just disappeared for a decade and then came back, was in this, was great, and then fucked off again.
Yeah.
And he wasn't Chris Tucker in this. No. He wasn't his usual, the like, shouting, lafty. Yeah.
He's like another damaged soul.
Yeah. I thought he was great.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And refreshing. A very honest film. We don't get honest films like this anymore.
No.
My choice is The Fighter.
Great film.
Lovely film.
I think, following on from the previous episode, I didn't realise how much I love a boxing film. Mm-hmm. But it's based on the real life story of Mickey Ward, an upstart in the boxing world who's trying to carve a name out for himself out of the shadow of his more famous but junky brother Dickie, who's played wonderfully by Christian Bale. And I love that it feels like a real portrayal of life. It doesn't feel like Hollywood glamour, it doesn't have that gloss or that shine over it. It's a very gritty film, and the O'Russells kind of make you feel like it's warts and all. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like this is just, you know, sort of a happy film, you know, oh great, you got the title, woohoo. I mean, there's some real issues with Dickie, played wonderfully by Christian Bale, like the struggle that we see him battling with drugs and, you know, how it affects his family. It's just really traumatic. But of course, Melissa Leo as the patriarch, the mother, for me, she completely steals the show, and rightfully so, got the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress that year. Her thick Boston accent kind of dances all across the screen whenever she's on there. And she's just this fierce, loyal mother that just wants the best for her kids, especially for Mickey, who's about to win the title. But my favourite thing about this whole film, and I love what David O. Russell did with it, is during the fight scenes themselves. He shoots it as if it's like you are watching a television set. It has this real kind of weird filter to it. But rather than just see sort of actions from the TV, you feel like you're inside the boxing ring as it's happening. So you hear all of those explicit conversations that Mickey's having with his trainers. My favourite part is when he's walking down into the ring and he's singing along with Whitesnake. Here I go again on my own. But it's wonderful, and of course, O'Russell does have a lot of trust into Bale in delivering this character, which he absolutely does. A real joyful film.
It again is what I was saying before about the Oscars. So you mentioned there that Melissa Leo won, Christian Bale won as well, and Amy Adams was nominated. Yeah. He just has this knack, and he has a great deal of faith in Mark Wahlberg. He's used Mark Wahlberg, I think, in three films. He was in this. He was in I Heart Huckabees. He was in Three Kings.
Yes.
He's one of the first directors to really put his trust in Marky Mark, him and Paul Thomas Anderson were the people who put Mark Wahlberg on the map dramatically.
And I like Mark Wahlberg.
He's great. Very underrated.
When he puts his mind to it and he's got a good director, he's great. If he does stuff like Transformers and stuff, stay away.
Exactly.
All happening.
But Amy Adams in that film. Amazing. She's great.
I love the fact she doesn't give one iota of a shit.
Yeah. Ever, there's not one bad acting performance in that. And you think it must be hard for Mark Wahlberg because he delivers one of the best performances, if not the best of his life. But then he's got Christian Bale next to him, just outshining him in every scene as the little brother that's not meant to be a big part. It must be tough going against that heavyweight.
Mm-hmm. Even the sisters. Oh, they're brilliant. They're a hoot. Yes.
All their hair and the trailer trash.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Just slats.
Nice impression.
Thank you.
So, social media.
Yes, indeed. On Twitter, the fourth dimension, @Mike_J_Lord, has said, gotta be American Hustle. It's a modern masterpiece, great performances, compelling story, one of my favourite films of the decade. On Instagram, Ben Zimmerman, a.k.a. Ben_in_Ireland, has said, Silver Linings Playbook, a thing of beauty.
Nice.
on Twitter, Greg Waterworth Jr. at Destro Vega has said joy. So clearly someone watched it.
Wow.
He said, never has a movie about a mop been so gripping.
I like that. Grip.
Yeah, grip. Mops, yeah. Mops have grips. I get it.
Nice.
On Twitter, Andrew Donlan at Hey Cactus has said, I'm going to be on my own with this, but I love I Heart Huckabees. I think it's hilarious. O. Russell, well, he's basically saying what I've said here is, O. Russell was the first to discover the comedic genius of Mark Wahlberg.
I don't know how I feel about that film.
I've never seen it.
I didn't love it.
It's a very strange film. You either love it or you don't. I was very confused by the end of it.
Yeah. On Facebook, Russell Hewitt has said, gotta be Three Kings, groundbreaking stuff. That film rules.
My dad loves that film. One of his favourite war films. Yeah. But yeah, I've not seen it for years, but it's a good one.
It's a good one. And I think it's more famous for being known as the film where George Clooney had an on-set fist fight with David O. Russell.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because O. Russell's known to be a bit of a Hitler on set.
Oh,
My Way or the Highway type. And apparently one day, I think he was talking shit to an extra, and Clooney, being the badass that he is, just was sick of it, wasn't having it, and just went up and twatted O. Russell.
Wow.
So they say anyway, and that's the story I've read. On Twitter, Liz T-A-J-P O'Driscoll at O_TAJP has said, flirting with disaster, Ben Stiller and Mary Tyler Moore in fine form. This is one of his really, really early films.
I haven't actually seen it. Intrigued though now.
Mm-hmm. And then finally on Twitter, Dave Roper at DaveRoper77 has said, I'm biased because I've always had a soft spot for boxing films, but it's The Fighter for me.
Yay.
Some great ones.
Indeed.
He's got a really good CV apart from Mop.
I wish that's what it was called. I wish it was called Mop rather than Joy.
That's it. Whose turn is it to masturbate now?
It's mine.
Wow. Let's have a big one.
Thank you.
Got a drum roll.
Yes, please. On the next episode, we will be masturbating over Guillermo del Toro.
Yes! Our rewatch this time round is 1971 classic A Clockwork Orange. The film focuses on Alex, the Beethoven-loving juvenile delinquent, who leads an antisocial and violent gang through a dystopian London. After being caught for his crimes, he's subjected to an experimental psychological procedure with the aim of rehabilitating him for his reintroduction into society. The film's directed and written by Stanley Kubrick, based on Anthony Burgess's novel, and stars Malcolm McDowell as Alex. Marky Mark, I'm going to throw this over to you first. A Clockwork Orange or A Cockwork Orange?
Do you know what I love about the rewatch? Sometimes it can be 10, 15 years since you've watched the film, and it was at uni I last saw this, and I was probably under the influence, I was drunk, and I was with a lot of people that love media studies and love film, and was telling me it's the best film ever. I don't like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I just found it annoying, and this is where we're going to have a good conversation a change.
Oh yeah, they're usually shit, our conversations.
We've been quite on the same page for our main reviews for a while.
Yeah.
And I just found it frustrating now. I don't get it. I understand it's great for it's a breakthrough for its time, the acting, the narration, the score. But you know when it doesn't matter what it is and how good it looks and whatever?
Yeah.
I just don't like it.
Fair enough.
Okay.
I respect your honesty. Gemma, come on, say something that makes sense.
I respect your honesty, idiot.
It's a colourful dystopian world that masks the horrors of rape, violence, murder, terror. You should be absolutely terrified every time you watch this. And I just love it. I think it's one of those films that really changed the way how I viewed films growing up.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, I used this film in one of my media studies projects when I was in A-level. We had to do a news report, and it was somebody under the influence of a horror film that started messing up with shit inside the real world. And I use this as an example. So my media studies teacher, Mr. Swain, who was awesome and really influenced me in my love of film, said for me to try and check this out, which I did. And from there, my whole world changed. I didn't no longer see the whole world as just Disney. I didn't see it as a romantic comedy kind of world. It's so progressive. It's so ahead of its time. And the score by Wendy Carlos is perfect. I love it.
Big up to Mr. Swain.
Yeah, Mr. Swain is the man. He really is.
I'm with you, Gemma, thankfully. I think this is an absolutely amazing film. And it's been a long time since I've seen it as well, to be honest. Maybe 6, 7 years. But it was everything that I remembered it to be. It is I wouldn't necessarily say it was Kubrick's best work, but I think it's his most iconic work.
I totally agree there.
For me. And that's where I want to start. I want to start with the direction, because when you're talking about The Great Man, you want to get straight into it. There are some shots in this film that just still to this day blow me away, not by their complexity, but just how perfectly formed they are. Think of the opening iconic shot, the close-up on Alex's face when he's in the milk bar with his droogs, and he's just got that sinister look on his face, and he's looking directly at the camera, and then the camera slowly just sort of zooms backwards, zooms out, and you see him sat there in all his glory in his bizarre outfit. It's instantly iconic.
And he never blinks. Never blinks. He's got that false eyelash in the Maloko, but with the music sort of soaring, it gives you that idea that this is going to be a disturbing story, because he has a sneer. It's not a smile, it's not a smirk, it's a sneer. And from that one cold look alone, you can instantly get a whole idea of what Alex is all about.
Yeah.
Instantly.
And I can't argue that visually it's incredible. Yeah. And you think to yourself, that is directing done incredibly in the 70s, never mind now, when people like Christopher Nolan are still trying to replicate how great this looks. And I was looking at it on my Blu-ray thinking, how is this like 50 years old or whatever it is? It's insane. And like you said, you could print that out. That image itself is used on so many film sites and best things. But I don't care. Do you know what I mean? I have no want to see then what happens. I know it's iconic. I know you're drawn in. I know he doesn't blink. But I'm just like, meh. It's a tough opening for me. I don't get it.
That's interesting.
I know.
Another shot in the film, I think perhaps my favourite shot, is near the start. It's when the droogs first attack the old tramp, and they're walking under the underpass and they're backlit, so their shadows are cast out in front of them. They're going on seemingly for a mile in front of them. Just brilliant bit of lighting and direction.
See, I love that.
Yeah.
That looked incredible. And that's also showing that, you know, themselves ahead of themselves and everything else, and it's so iconic. Yeah. So it looks beautiful. It's just the story, I think, that I don't care about.
So let's get into it then. Talk to us what it is about the story you don't get or don't like.
It's not I don't get. I just think, I don't know what. It's hard, isn't it, to put it into words, but I was just sitting there going, I want this to end. I'm just frustrated with it.
Done.
Like, I find it quite tough, that opening kind of rape scene, that kind of.
Absolutely.
It's not an easy watch. No. And you're not going to be sitting there going, go on, yeah, wicked. It's just. It's done a bit too visual. I think sometimes in a rape, in a film, you see or hear the stuff that's gone on. You don't actually physically see what's happening. And in this film, he doesn't hold back. And you see these scenes where you're literally like, Jesus Christ, that's too real. The orgy scenes, everything about it, the beating of the family when they're kicking her on the floor. It's, I don't know if I was just not in the right frame of mind, but it seemed just to hit hard. And I was like, this is a very tough watch right now.
And the thing is, it's no wonder this film was so controversial when it came out in 1971. Damn. It's tough to watch now.
Yeah.
And we as a people are far more desensitized to that kind of thing than people were in 1971. So it's no surprise that people refused to show it, and that there was uproar about it, and people saying that Kubrick was immoral and all this kind of stuff. It's tough. It's very tough to watch.
Especially when the character Alex is narrating the whole film, and usually you put your trust in a narrator, you put your trust in the person that's directing you through the story. Alex is in no way, shape or form a sympathetic character whatsoever. He has no emotion, no empathy. He's actually a bit of a sociopath when you think about it. And it's very uncomfortable to watch, knowing that this guy is directing you where to go and where to look and what to see and hear his story. It's hard to actually try and relate to somebody like that, and I get that, especially when the violence isn't hiding anything. It's very unflinching. It's directly in front of you. And when you juxtapose it with a really cheery and joyful song like Singing in the Rain, that's going to haunt you a lot.
It was a weird experience, because I don't remember it the first time I watched it, but I think the narration is great. I love his voice. It's so iconic. It stays with you. Like you said, you haven't got like Morgan Freeman going, I'm not going to do any Morgan Freeman.
That would not have gone well.
No, I'm not doing it. But he's got a soft, soothing voice that you just think, oh, it's him. I feel safe. It's like a comfort blanket. This guy's, he's fucked up. He's fucking gone in the head. So to hear him, you're in his mind, and then you're seeing what he's doing. You're like, it's too much. You're like, Christ, this guy's a mentalist. And there's no other voices coming in to kind of distract you. It's all him. So the focus is all on this main character, and he's one of the best actors of all time, I think, in this performance. And it's too close to the bone. You're like, Jesus Christ, the way he's dancing in between, kicking the shit out of this woman in the face and stuff, and his stomach. It's just, don't get me wrong, I've got a bad sense of humour. I watch stuff like Jam and stuff, but it's just fucked up. You know, when you're not in the right... Maybe it's not a Saturday night beer and pizza movie before you record. And there I was, sitting there going, oh, I'll watch this. It was tough going. Really bloody tough.
It is.
It's the emphasis of the grotesque.
Yeah. And to know, like Ben said, this was in the 70s. Like, my parents must have been like, let's call the police, because this director needs locking up, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean,
the controversy that
Kubrick
went with it
didn't give a shit, man. He had an artistic vision and he would follow it through regardless of what other people thought. But just going back to Malcolm McDowell's voice, one of the things that I found interesting is that it's set in London and all of the other characters either have generic Cockney accents or just posh Southern accents, but Kubrick purposefully let McDowell maintain his Northern accent, and it does make him sound more otherworldly to the other characters, but he doesn't sound anything like anyone else, and it just shows how unique and odd he is within that world.
And the sense of homeliness with his parents, because they've got like a thick sort of Northern Yorkshire accent, haven't they? Like, you're right there, Dad. Oh, yes, Mum, I'm fine.
And they're a lovely family.
Yeah.
They're a really, really nice family. They're parents you dream of. And then they've got this son that's just, oh, God.
It just made me think of the scene when he goes through the Ludovico technique to get rid of his bad impulses to rape and murder and all that kind of stuff. And he comes back home and his parents have had that lodger move in.
Yeah,
he's just an absolute douche. And he's like, oh yeah, they're my family now. They're like my parents. How dare you come back? Yeah. It's like, why would you let this prick move into your house?
Look at what you've made your ma do. She's like, like proper boo-hooing.
You've just let Denny move in, haven't you? That's exactly what it is. Denny's moved in and replaced you while you've gone out to the shop.
He just likes to watch.
Yes.
I think one of the things that makes the film watchable, because it is very bleak and there's a lot of stuff that is very close to the bone, is that there are a lot of individual amusing characters. So that lodger, I find him very amusing.
Yeah.
The head prison officer with the bad moustache, I think he's hilarious.
I love him.
Every time they cut to him and he's pulling a face or pouting his mouth or ruffling his moustache, he's hilarious to me. Then you've got the guy, I can't remember his name, but I think he was kind of like his parole officer or something, the one who says,
yes,
at the end of every sentence. He's hilarious. Yeah. He's felt like something from The League of Gentlemen to me.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the cat lady.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't have a telephone. You're going to have to go to the public house. Like, I could listen to her talk all day. She was fucking amazing.
And I think that's what gets you through all the really negative and dark, powerful stuff, is that you've got the levity brought by these amusing individual characters.
And so much symbolism throughout.
Oh my God, the red and the orange again.
Yeah, and the massive great big penises.
Yeah.
Like, and vaginas.
Everywhere. And vaginas. Yeah, of course, yeah. Snakes in like the gold watches and everything. Yeah.
It is good for that. But Ben just summed it up perfectly. Like League of Gentlemen, they've so took it from that, because you can be watching stuff in that that's dark as fuck.
Yeah.
But because you're laughing on the next scene 5 minutes later. Yeah. But the tone in this film is a bit all over the shop, because you get that dark tone, you get the rape scene, you get the abuse, but then you get a bit where you're laughing out loud and you're still like, Jesus, this is... It's tough.
It's interesting, because I think it makes you question yourself, because if you know how bad and awful this is, and then you laugh at something, you think, shit, should I be laughing at that? Does that speak poorly of me?
Yeah.
Am I a bad person?
Yeah,
and I am.
Yeah.
But was that Burgess's intent when writing the book, or was that Kubrick's attempt to kind of get the audience to question that?
I think it's a little from column A, a little from column B. Yeah. Like the whole story behind it is that it's about free will, isn't it? It's about what is goodness. Is being forced to be good really goodness if you haven't chosen to do it yourself? That's really at the crux of the story. The interesting thing to me is this film was based on the US version of the novel, the US, not translation, but they had their own version, which omitted the final chapter. In the UK, there was an additional chapter where Alex decides that even though the programming has sort of gone out of his brain and he can enjoy violence and all that kind of stuff again, he decides that he wants to grow up and chooses to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see that in the film, because it's not in the American version of the book, which is what Kubrick used to write the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of glad that that's not in there.
Yeah.
I like the ambiguity of him at the end with that little smirk on his face, and he's enjoying Beethoven again. Yeah. You're thinking, what's this little fucker going to do now?
I was cured, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
I
think that's a much more powerful and ambiguous ending than him going, oh, actually, do you know what? I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
That'd be shit.
I kind of want a sequel, though. I want to know where he went. I want to know where he went when he had that thought again and he's back on to himself. I thought, what's he going to do? Where's he going to go now?
It's definitely not going to be influenced by American Pie.
No.
Do you know what the problem is, though? We have this track record of when we wish for something, it happens.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no,
so
what have we done?
You know now, next week it's going to be announced, Clockwork Orange 2.
And the main cast will be Stifler.
Oh, my God. Him smirking with, like, a fake eyelash and a bowler's hat.
I tell you what, dude, Stanley Kubrick was one sadistic bastard.
Massively. Yeah.
I think the biggest sign of that in this film is the bit near the end when the Droogs, who've now become cops, decide to drown Alex, and they hold his head in the trough. And it wasn't a stunt door. You see when he comes out that's actually Malcolm McDowell. How long were they holding him under?
It was all one take.
It's got to be a minute. It was there were no edits.
Yeah,
no. They were just drowning the fucker.
Yep.
Why would you allow that to happen?
I reckon in the 70s, you just got the contract with the script and it didn't give you all the ins and outs. So you're like, oh, this sounds great. I'm going to be the lead role, right? And it's Stanley Kubrick, who's known for these incredible films. I'll do it. And then you're like, hang on, who's doing this scene for me? You are. I want you to do it. Yeah. I can't edit. There's no CGI. Get your fucking head under the water.
They were hard bastards in the 70s.
Yeah. They were.
They didn't have Wi-Fi. I mean, what were you to do? You can't just have a look on the news on your mobile phone. It's like, right, just dunk your head in the water for about a minute or so.
I'm warming to it, you know, when we start. But I'm appreciating more, which is what I like.
Good.
But it still was tough.
So other than the visuals, which you've said you like, was there anything when you went through the 2 hours, 15 minutes of the film that you thought, oh, actually, I do like that bit?
Just the directing. Yeah. Honestly, you just show how he's the best. You look at that, 2001, Shining. Yeah. Everything's different. He is doing what I think Christopher Nolan does now, where every film's very different. He doesn't stick to one thing and just try, and then that'll do. And you can't believe he's the same guy that did 2001. You can't. You watch it and think, Jesus Christ, you can with The Shining, with the colours and the symbolism and it all being equal and all this. But I was watching it thinking, this guy's a fucking genius and he's still doing it in the 70s when people aren't doing it on that level now in 2018.
Yeah.
So I'll give him the credit there.
Mm-hmm.
What about the reimagination of the score of Beethoven by Wendy Carlos? It's so electronic, it's so futuristic, but it still has that sense of foreboding, that sense of uneasiness when you listen to it.
I love the theme that opens the film, that bow.
That's awesome. That's amazing, I'll give you that.
It's so atmospheric. It really puts you in that position straight away when you're in the film.
No, the soundtrack was awesome. Mm-hmm. And I can listen to it on its own. I think it would still be great. You haven't got to see it with the visuals. I think you could sit there and listen to it from start to finish and be like, that's amazing.
Yeah,
even absolutely. The bit with the William Tell overture when he's shagging those two ladies.
That's mental. The editing in that.
Yeah. I love how they sped it up. That's really cool.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
If you pause it, you see quite a lot of tits.
There we go. Yeah.
This is what he spent last night doing.
Yeah, which was great. But no, genuinely, that editing was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see how many films have taken and how many directors have taken influence from him.
Yeah, oh God.
He's the man.
Absolutely is, yeah. So at least you found things within it to enjoy, even if you didn't care much for the story and found it a bit bleak.
That's fair enough. It's quite good to have a difference of opinion.
There are going to be ones that you just don't enjoy.
Of course.
No. Yeah. Like I said, I appreciate it and I respect it. I just don't enjoy it. I mean, I don't want to watch it again.
You're absolutely right. It's no Elizabethtown.
No, exactly. It's my rewatch choice next as well.
Shall we score it?
Yes.
Go on then, Mark. What are you going to give it?
I don't want to be too harsh because we've praised it. So I'm going to go down the middle, 5.
Okay, fair enough. Gemma?
I'm going to give it a nice, healthy 9 out of 10.
Yes, I'm going to give it a 9 as well, which is what, 23?
I don't know.
Let's call it an 8.
Yeah, okay.
Let's call it an 8 overall. So A Clockwork Orange gets a skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
So lovely. As I just said, it's my rewatch choice, and I've really enjoyed that only 2 episodes ago we did the 70s classic Rocky, and now we've done another 70s classic with A Clockwork Orange, so I think I should not ruin it and do another 70s classic.
Okay.
Oh.
So on the next episode, we're going to be watching Jaws.
Hey! Amazing! Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. It is the third and final round of the Actor Factor.
Woo!
Yeah! Woo! Come on, yes!
Woo!
So, this will probably come as no surprise to people, but Ben has essentially won the Actor Factor.
Yeah.
How do you feel, Ben?
Pretty good.
Excellent. So, Mark, you're just doing this for funsies.
Taking part that matters.
Exactly. Hey, I know what you're saying there.
Yes.
If you ain't first, you're last, Ricky Bobby.
So we have Mark and Ben teaming up for this final exciting round, and they are Team Benham.
Benham we are.
I love that.
The aim of the game, what they're going to do is, there's a series of actors and actresses' names. So what one of them has to do is tell the other who this actor or actress is without saying their name, without saying what film they're in, without saying any catchphrases. So they have to describe this person to the other contestant. If they get it right, they get a point. Seems simple?
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board.
Brilliant, then so am I. And good. As your captain, I say let's start this game. So who wants to go first?
Go on, I'll go first.
Ben?
Jesus.
Lovely.
Watch him punch me halfway through.
So the score to beat is what? Was it 30?
It was 30. Yeah.
Easy.
So we're going to have 2.5 minutes on the clock. Ben, are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's go!
We saw him in a film a couple of episodes ago. He played a racist at the start of the film and then you don't see him again for the rest of the film. He's from a famous acting family.
Alec Baldwin.
Correct.
Well done.
That was a good film.
Known to be the best actress of all time, always nominated for Oscars.
Helen Mirren?
No.
Best actress of all time.
That's what people say. I don't agree, but she's had more Oscars.
Meryl Streep?
Correct.
Ooh.
Mushmouth, never enunciates.
Oh, Tom Hardy.
Correct.
Very fitting.
Oh, God. No, forget it.
Oh, we got a pass.
It was Colin Firth, and I couldn't bring myself to try and British describe wanker. Him. Yeah. Have a look around my living room, and you'll see posters with him on twice.
Harrison Ford?
Correct.
Nice.
A superb actor. Oh, God, he's tough to describe. I'm going to pass on that one. Willem Dafoe. That would have been
a good one. That is quite tough.
Very hard.
Was a big actress in the 90s, did films with Tim Burton, now is more famous for TV.
Oh, Winona Ryder?
Yep, Winona Ryder, correct.
I love her.
He loves selling mobile phones.
Oh, Kevin Bacon.
He bloody loves it.
He is an Irish actor and Christopher Nolan loves him.
Cillian Murphy or Killian.
Killian, yeah.
Well done.
A guy I mentioned earlier, one of my favourite comedic actors. He's in everything that... he's in the MCU. He's also in films from Judd Apatow.
Paul Rudd.
Correct.
Cracking.
She notoriously had an affair with John F. Kennedy. Blonde playboy model died.
Marilyn Monroe.
Correct. In every Tim Burton film.
Oh, Helen Bonham Carter. Correct. Yeah, God, every film.
Every.
Former child actor.
Corey Feldman.
No, sadly not. She then had a rather severe drug addiction, but then came through it, and she's still in things these days. Does a lot of films with Adam Sandler.
Don't know.
Drew Barrymore.
Oh, damn it. Sorry.
A guy who we talked about earlier, who was known in the 80s for his work in rom-coms. John Hughes liked him.
John Candy?
No.
John Goodman?
You got the first name right.
John, don't know.
Likes to hold up radios.
Oh, John Cusack. Correct. Brilliant.
John Candy.
Yeah.
Died recently, was going to be in a Tarantino film.
Don't know.
Died very recently. We said RIP to him like two episodes ago.
Oh, we're out of time.
No, but you're allowed to answer.
You're allowed to get this one.
Give me a sec. He died what?
He was going to be in a new Tarantino film, but then he didn't film his part in time because he died.
I don't know.
Fucking hell. Burt Reynolds.
Oh! Useless. I don't know why.
Useless.
So, you got 11.
That's all right.
That, respectable, yeah. But I reckon Mark's going to do it. I think you're going
to... I've only got to get 17.
You're going to do it, Sunshine. Okay, so score's 11. Mark, are you ready?
When you are.
Go!
Runs in every film he's ever been
Tom
in.
Tom Cruise.
Yes. posh bitch, British.
Oh my God!
And had a steamy scene in the Titanic.
I know exactly who you mean, but I can't remember her bloody name. It's not going to come to me. Okay. I know exactly who it is.
One of the greatest actors of all time, always winning Oscars. He's just absolutely amazing.
Tom Hanks,
no,
Robert De Niro,
no,
Al Pacino.
One. No, he's not young. He's the opposite.
Old.
He's an... Yep, old.
Gary Oldman.
Yes!
He's won one Oscar. Always winning Oscars, yes. He says.
Can't get enough of them.
Jesus.
The most beautiful man alive, and I want to wank on him.
Ryan Gosling.
Yes. the actual greatest gangster actor of all time that isn't De Niro, the other one.
Pacino.
Yes, thank you. One of the greatest actors, and he is directing recently, and you'll love him, and he's very, very good in every film he's ever been
That's
in.
That's not helping me.
No, he's Too a fun. Racist in one of his films, and he changes his mind.
Edward Norton.
Yes! I love that. We've just talked about her today, about how she's so good, one of the best actresses on the planet, and the chemistry she has with someone I've just
Emma
wanked
Stone.
Over. Yes, brilliant.
Wanked over.
We've also talked about this woman today in her pick for one that we did over Masturbate, and she's one of the greatest actors of our generation.
Jennifer Lawrence?
No, but she's in one of the episodes of The Office.
Oh, Amy Adams.
Yes! Yeah. Which is weird. Another great actress that was featured with one of the others, and she had a sexy scene with another woman when she was doing some dancing.
I don't know.
She did some dancing at ballet, and then she had a...
Oh God, Natalie Portman.
Yes. Incredible.
Is this a good actress?
And then we just talked about a shaved head. Another actress that had a shaved head.
Demi Moore.
No, another one that was recent in a film that's just a big chase. That's all it is, a long chase.
Oh, Charlize Theron.
Yes. Incredible. We talked about this guy today because of his stomach in one of the films.
Christian Bale.
Yes. Incredible. This guy is also cast in every fucking film along with that woman for Tim Burton. Every
Johnny
fucking
Depp, Johnny
one.
Depp.
Yes. We talked about this guy and South Park take the piss with the pronunciation of his name.
Matt Damon.
Yes. One of the best actors in the business. He's very
That's
posh
what he does for everyone.
And also promotes drinks and aftershave and stuff like that. He's just a grey looking beautiful man.
Clooney?
Yes, great work.
Posh. He's very posh, apparently.
Yes,
posh
he's very bitch. Posh. He's absolutely stacked and used to be a WWE
Batista.
Wrestler. No, it's
Rock.
Another one. Yes.
Can we have that?
You can
yes.
have it.
That's quite a few.
How many we get?
No. Firstly, every actor in that pile was the greatest actor of all time.
Yeah.
Mark got 14.
That's all right.
That's all right. We did all right.
So, altogether, 14 plus 11, that makes 25?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. I thought I got my answers wrong. So, 25 for Benham. But let's face it, the big winner of the day is Ben.
And you.
And me.
We won together.
We did win together. Yeah. Yes, teamwork.
Yeah, there we go.
Sorry,
oh,
Mark.
I feel like shit. But I think
you did really well.
One.
You did really well.
Good.
And that was fun.
It was fun.
We have to end it. We can't come back.
No, we are not ending this. This carries on.
I know it's fun, but all good things come to an end. And maybe one day we'll bring it back when we're struggling. But in the meantime, we'll have a brand new game show on the next episode in 2 weeks' time.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point of the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. Simple as that.
Mm. Boom.
Gemma, what have you got?
Hi.
Hi. Hello there.
Hello, yes, me. I've got a book.
Ooh.
I know, I can finally read.
How to read.
I know, yeah.
The book.
The Very Hungry Caterpillar. Yes. No. It's a memoir by Lily Allen called My Thoughts Exactly.
Oh.
Now, I'm going to put my hand up. I'm not a fan of her work.
Right.
No, okay. Really.
But I decided to pick it up after hearing some very interesting reviews from it. But I quite enjoyed her last album, No Shame. I thought that was quite good. Now, she's had quite a colourful life in her existence, and she's been a very big favourite with the tabloids with stories involving drink, drugs and outspoken opinions. But this book really breaks down a lot of these myths, and even Allen is aware of the character that these tabloids have created over the years. The term warts and all totally applies for this book, and it's a refreshingly honest and exposed book about the years in the spotlight for her. It's actually quite a sad read, especially when she reflects on the relationship that she has with her parents. Obviously, her dad is most famous being 90s caner Keith Allen. And she unflinchingly tells all the shitty ways he's never really stepped up to being a good dad to her or her siblings. And he still isn't really a great guy, if I'm honest. Mm. He's more interested in getting his leg over or getting a bit of the old... allegedly. It's not alleged, it's true. But she doesn't step back in any way, shape or form. She's very, very open as to what's happened. You know, she tells the story of how she got signed, how she's grown up with her kids. But also it has a very harsh story about her first pregnancy, which sadly resulted in the baby being stillborn. And it's very, very open. It kind of tells about her battle with mental health that she experienced during that whole process. She writes with truth and no shame whatsoever. So the way how she presents the story is without pretension, and it's without the need to try and hide anything from the reader. I really couldn't put it down. It was something that's really grabbed my attention straight away and has actually made me think about somebody a little bit different that perhaps I wasn't really a big fan of. I certainly respect the fact that she's come out the other side. She's come up a lot stronger. And she's celebrating being a really strong person. So it's a fascinating read.
I read something like one of the stories she tells is that her dad, when she was little, her dad, Keith, took her to a festival, but then had a cocaine-fueled heart attack.
Yes.
Which she wrote in her book.
That happened, yeah.
He then came out and said, I didn't, I had food poisoning or something. And she's had to go, oh, sorry. So,
yeah.
I don't know, you know, is she just appeasing him or did she just genuinely make up a bullshit story about him? Who knows?
Yeah. He's still a knob.
She went away for a while, didn't she? She was massive like 10 years ago. Yeah. Everyone was like, and then she just disappeared.
Yeah, she got. She mentions in the book she got married to a chap. You know, she was really happy. She had a lot of codependent relationships growing up because of the abandonment of her father. And she settled down with this guy, had a few kids with him. And as a result of the last album, No Shame, the marriage pretty much just crumbled. There's also stories in the paper about her enforcing the requests of a lady escort, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, which I read about that as well.
Obviously has made the book spike sales go right right up high, like a little bit of like a mountain. But you know, that's not the fascinating part of the book. The whole book is just it's so good. I'm really enjoying it.
I've never cared for her music, it's not my scene, but I've always kind of liked her. She's always struck me as pretty cool and brassy. I think she seems angry.
She's worked for it as well, you know. She just hasn't just like got it given on a plate.
And
she's worked
and that
hard.
Really, really comes across it. She goes, I know that people are thinking I'm some rich bitch that's gone through all these private schools, but no, she really had to work herself right from the bottom all the way up.
Good
for her.
Good on her. And she's now got a mention on here, so it's been all worth it.
Hey, Lily.
All the troubles and heartbreak led to this moment.
Well done.
But no, worth a read.
Wow.
What you got, Mark?
It's an album. It's by a band called Black Peaks, and it's called All That Divides. It only came out last week. It's their second album after their debut, Statues. Now, we went to see them support someone, I think
they supported Deftones?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And they're just growing and growing. And considering it's only their second album, I think it's always hard to come after a big debut. It's always difficult. But it's an intelligent album that's just took a huge jump. It doesn't sound anything like the first album. They've got more confident. They've got more dynamics. A bit like Deftones. They evolve. There's definitely elements of At the Drive-In, System of a Down, Deftones, and definitely Tool. They've just been on tour in Europe with A Perfect Circle, so you can hear the Maynard influences that have probably happened. But the production on there and the way that they're so technical at times, they just did verse, chorus, verse on their first album. It was solid, it was good songs, and they were just good musicians. Now they've gone, well, actually, let's take it up a notch. Let's show what we can do and have intricate breakdowns. Let's have weird off-timing. Let's have these dynamics that bands aren't used to. Let's try and be different to every band on the radio. And I believe they're, at this moment, one of the best British bands right now. There's a big scene at the moment where you get Marmosets, you get these guys, they're all breaking out and getting names themselves, like Jamie Lemon, all these good bands, and these are probably at the top right now. They've got two singles out, one's called Can't Sleep and one's called Home, and if you listen to both of those and you get a good flavour for it and you think this is what I like, you'll love the album. If you listen to Home and go, this isn't for me, it's a bit screamy, it's literally at times, dude, I can hear Soulfly and Sepultura, the riffs at the end are so heavy, and he's just developed this scream that he's using to the best of his ability. It's not like Chino, it's a full-on metal scream. It's so well produced. It sounds like it's $1 million album. It sounds up there with sort of Limp Bizkit, you know, the quality you expect from these albums. It's fucking unbelievable, and I've not stopped listening to it for 3 days. Doesn't sound like long, but I've been driving everywhere, doing a lot, and it's just on repeat. I get a little bit annoyed because the album's only 9 tracks. And for
lazy.
Me, I want an album of 12. Yeah. But then we like Queens of the Stone Age, who I think gave us 8 recently. Yeah. So you kind of accept it. But I think, oh, if I want an album and I've paid money, I want 12 to 15 tracks. But what I will say is there's no filler. I think there's 9 songs on this album that could make 9 songs you'd hear on radio. They're that good, and this album is that solid. And usually, Ben, I recommend stuff. You're not going to go and read the Beatles bloody graphic novel. You're not going to check out any of the stuff I've said. But this album, when I listened to it again today on the way here, I thought to myself, he's going to like this because it's got elements of a lot of the bands you listen to.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I will give it a go because, well, as you say, we saw them supporting Deftones a few years back, and I can't for the life of me remember what they sound like.
No.
All I remember is that the lead singer keeps doing this Jesus Christ pose on stage, which frustrated the life out of me. That's all I remember of them.
Hopefully he stopped doing that. Yeah. But on the record, you can't hear his arms up. So
that's good.
It's a great album. And the good thing about it is, I was reading some reviews today, it's getting 5 stars, 10 out of 10. Everyone's saying it's as good as what I've just said. It's brilliant. So check it out. And what I think I recommended thrice a couple of episodes ago, people jump on and listen to the music we recommend. And I think a lot of people will just be like, who? They'll check them out and they'll be like, yeah, they were fucking great.
Excellent recommendation.
Cool.
And I'm going to wrap it up with a book as well.
Cool.
Mine is a book from 2014 called Console Wars by Blake J. Harris.
Awesome.
And it focuses on businessman Tom Kalinske when he takes over Sega of America in 1990. He's then given the mandate of making Sega as successful in the US as Nintendo. So Nintendo had a stranglehold over the video game market at that point due to their wildly successful NES and Game Boy systems. The book then charts the rivalry between Sega and between Nintendo with the introduction of things like the Sega Game Gear and the Genesis, known in this country as the Mega Drive, and Nintendo fighting back with the SNES. It also then goes into depth looking at the creation of Sonic the Hedgehog, because at the time Nintendo were the biggest because Mario was on everyone's wall, everyone had it, you know, stickers and games and t-shirts and all that kind of stuff. So Sega had to come up with something to rival Mario, and that's how they came up with the Sonic character. And reading about that is fascinating because it was Sega of Japan who came up with the character, and the people like Tim Kalinske in America, they looked at this and went, okay, so this is our new character, Sonic the Hedgehog. And Kalinske went, what's a hedgehog? And I'm thinking, how can he not know what a hedgehog is?
Yeah.
But I googled it. Hedgehogs aren't natural to North America. They don't have them.
Oh.
So it's not surprising he didn't know what one was.
Yeah.
But now everyone in America knows what a hedgehog is because of Sonic. So it's weird, isn't it,
that they wouldn't
have known what one of these was, but now it's pervasive because everyone knows who Sonic the Hedgehog is. But this book's absolutely brilliant about charting this rivalry. As you get towards the end of the book, it then looks at the new player in the game as well, when Sony come in and try and swoop in with their PlayStation. It's so brilliantly written. What he's done, Blake Harris, is he's had hundreds of interviews with people who worked for Nintendo, Sega, Sony, etc. But then instead of presenting it like a non-fiction book, he's woven it into a narrative so it reads like a novel. and it makes it even more engrossing. You get sucked in because you get to know all these people as characters rather than just people spewing out quotes. Because of that, it's not always great. Some of the dialogue can be a bit clunky where he's kind of put words into people's mouths, but it's still a really, really fun read. It's actually also been optioned by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. They're going to make a documentary based on it as well. So get out there. If you give two shits about video gaming, and I'm not a big gamer by any stretch of the imagination, but this was my era.
Yeah.
The era of the Master System, the Mega Drive, the NES, the SNES, we had them all.
Oh, yeah.
So this is my era of gaming, the first PlayStation. It's a fascinating read. It's great just to look at how businesses compete with each other and how rivals fuck each other over and try and one-up one another. It's an absolutely brilliant book.
Awesome.
Have a read.
I will do. And to go on something that Ben on the last episode said, what was your recommendation 2 weeks ago?
My recommendation?
Yes. What was your recommendation?
My recommendation was Killing Eve.
And I watched them all.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely fucking amazing.
Yep.
And it is one of the best TV series I've ever seen. What's the girl from Sideways called again?
Sandra Oh.
She is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
I thought the villain was incredible.
Jodie Comer. Yeah. She's unreal.
Honestly. And I just sat there and I think I watched them in about 3 days. I was texting you, wasn't I? Yeah. When I got to 6, 7. I can't wait for more.
Yeah, me too.
It's brilliant. So I actually, for once, did what I said.
And it's only taken, what, 4.5 years?
Yeah.
Minimum.
So in return, I want you to watch
Elizabeth Town.
That episode. That.
Fuck that shit.
What recommendations do we have from the beautiful social media?
Oh, we've had loads. On Facebook, Tonya Jarrett has said The Invitation, directed by Karen Kusama. It's a perfect Halloween film for intellectuals who are also horror fans. It creeps up on you psychologically and emotionally until it's hard to breathe. Now, I've not seen this, but you two are horror fans. Have either of you seen The Invitation?
Yes.
Is it one they all go to the house?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
I didn't like it.
Dinner party. What?
The dinner
really?
Party thing. Yeah, it was well done, but I just didn't care for it.
No, the sense of dread all throughout was fantastic. Yeah. I thought it was executed wonderfully.
It was all right.
Fight, fight,
yeah.
Fight.
Yeah.
On Twitter, Chris Beck at Mr. Beck Please has said, currently reading the final volume of Jason Aaron's Mighty Thor run. It's the kind of colourful Marvel cosmic fantasy that fans now know thanks to Thor Ragnarok and Guardians of the Galaxy. I've not read any of Jason Aaron's run on Thor, but I really enjoyed his run on The Punisher, so I shall check that one out for sure. On Twitter, Andrew Nicholson at King Grimlock has said, just discovered Welsh reggae / metal band Skindred. The high energy and mix of genres keeps me digging into their back catalogue. I haven't listened to Skindred in years.
No, and we saw them at, was it Download?
Download, we met Benji as
well. Yeah, they're a good band. Yeah. I just haven't listened to them for years.
No, I saw them support Steel Panther as well a couple of years ago and they were really good. Their first record, Babylon, I remember that being amazing.
Was it as good as Babylon Zoo?
What, Spaceman?
Yeah.
Nearly.
No,
nearly.
It wasn't. Bullshit.
On Instagram, NWORB_C has said, Hold the Dark on Netflix, a strange and very grisly film by Jeremy Saulnier, director of Blue Ruin and Green Room.
Sold.
This is on my list of what to watch.
Somebody
recommended it to me earlier on in the week, and I was like, I will watch it.
He's perfect at the moment. His films are fucking awesome.
I still haven't seen Blue Ruin.
Have you not?
No, I loved Green Room, but I've still not watched Blue
Ruin.
It's
brilliant. I've heard it.
It's really good.
It's great.
I'll get on that. On Twitter, Paulie Shire at SpeckyPaul77 has said Loudermilk on Amazon Prime, a Peter Farrelly comedy show starring Ron Livingston.
Oh, wow. That's of the Farrelly brothers.
Indeed, yeah. And it is very good. He plays this kind of self-help guy who runs like an AA meeting for people because he's a drunk and he's just an irascible old twat.
Oh,
it's a very good show.
Sold.
And the interesting thing as well is Peter Farrelly, who's created the show, he's also directed a film recently called Green Book, which is getting a lot of Oscar buzz.
Oh, okay.
So there's talk that one of the co-creators of Shallow Hal might get an Oscar nomination.
I love
Stuck
it.
On You.
Yeah. Oh, I love Stuck on You.
Stuck on You's great,
that's
isn't
a good
it?
Film. Yeah.
Feature rewatch.
On Facebook, Sarah Jane Thomas had said, listened to the latest Yahtzee Croshaw book, Differently Morpheus, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Always enjoy his narrations as well as the humorous stories. I'm not familiar with Yahtzee Croshaw.
No.
I'm familiar with Yahtzee.
Not the game.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's great. Yeah. That's a good one that we can check out.
Thank you for that, Sarah Jane. Russell Osborne at No Not Related said, I'd recommend the movie Terrifier, an old school slasher movie dripping in gore but genuinely scary in places. The main villain is a clown called Art, and he's without doubt the most disturbing clown I've ever seen in a movie.
Wow, even the one in House of a Thousand Corpses.
More than Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
That's more than Doink and Dink.
Yeah,
they were horrifying.
Dink is horrifying.
So have neither of you seen Terrifier?
No.
I'm surprised. On Facebook, Lee Nixon, reading the autobiography by Slash from Guns N' Roses, highly recommended.
I bet that's awesome. I bet he's got some great stories to tell.
Oh, mate, I dread to think the kind of shenanigans he's been up to over the last 30 years.
Think of the stuff that didn't make the page. Jesus
stuff
Christ.
Stuff that he couldn't talk about because he'd get sued.
He's a legend.
He was amazing when we saw them at Download, wasn't
he? They were. Even you stuck around for like an hour.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of him, but I thoroughly enjoyed them.
So good live.
Samantha Ackland at Fluffy Sammy, reading a new comic from Image called Unnatural, and it's bloody brilliant. At 25, you have to have a partner or be matched up by the government, and it's against the law to love another species, or else you'll get put down. But a pig girl dreams of a wolf.
Wow.
That sounds mental.
Kind of sounds like a little bit of a messed up version of The Lobster.
The Lobster, that's yeah. exactly what I thought, yeah. That was a weird film.
That was a very weird film.
Yeah. And then finally, this is a great one. Our old mate Rupert Denham Hall at Hall_Business went to the final ever League of Gentlemen show at the Hammersmith Apollo and was absolutely blown away. A local show for local people.
Oh, yes.
I would have loved to have gone to
I went to Birmingham with Paul, who does the artwork.
Nice, how was it?
It was amazing. It worked. They did all the first half in their normal shirts and suits like they used to when they first started out. Uh-huh. And I was like, this is good, but it's... He was doing like, Papa, come to Papa, and all this. And I was like, it's working, but I want to see the characters.
Yeah.
And then they have this halfway point, and Legs Akimbo come out, and they're all dressed up. And I was like, hey. And then we had the bingo caller, and then we had, you know, creme brulee. and then we had the actual guys turn up, you know, Tubbs, Edward. Yeah. They're all suited and booted in their outfits.
There.
It was awesome, yes, everyone. Yes. It was all fucking brilliant. And it worked so well when I didn't know if it would. I thought, is this still going to be good? And they had elements from carrying it on from the TV series. But when we saw Pauline, my God, and Mickey Love, it's fucking dark, weird shit. And yeah, you need to, hopefully they'll, I'm sure they filmed it. I'm sure it'll be out on DVD.
You work, shy set of bastards.
Piss off, lass. But yeah.
Egregious. God, it's I love great. That show. Yeah. So that's their final tour, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
They'll come
sucks.
Back, mate. They made a lot of bumps. Yeah, I bet you know, the final tour again.
yeah.
Some great recommendations this time.
Some brilliant ones. And we'd like you to keep sending them in, please, on Twitter at STTEpodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or via email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Quick one this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, and sometimes it has to be. Yeah.
Short and sweet.
It's like,
we don't do these Gone Girl 2 hour 45 minute interview podcasts ever now.
Retro.
Who has the time? It would have been a longer episode if Venom was any good.
Yeah, but it was not.
You play the card you're dealt. And we got dealt that absolute shower of
shit. You roll the dice.
But the good news is, guys, even though we got shat on this time and last time with the Predator, what's our next main review?
Mate, it's Halloween. I'm not even a horror fan, as is well established on this show, but I love Danny McBride.
Yep.
The early looks at the film, it looks genuinely good. I'm tremendously excited for that.
Jamie Lee Curtis has been doing a lot of press. I listened to it on Radio 2. I saw it on Graham Norton. John Carpenter's doing the score. It's going to be fucking great. The reviews from America and some of the people that got a screening in Ireland this weekend were saying it's like the best horror film of the year. It's absolutely awesome. I've got no worries.
Yeah. At the very least, it's got to be better than the myriad sequels or the god-awful Rob Zombie version.
Yes. Oh, and it'll definitely be better than Venom.
Yes, it will.
So we've already won up.
But you could take a shit in a bowl and stay on that for 2 hours. It would be better than Venom.
It's true.
Gemma, what's the topic?
We're going to be talking about our top three bullies in films, or top three bullies.
I love it.
Yeah, like, I'm not talking about these great big villains, you know. No. I'm talking about these people that push you around, and it's really unfair. So, bully for us.
Bully for us, indeed.
Everyone loves a bit of bully.
That's true. Yeah, everyone knows that. What's the rewatch?
Oh, just a small one. Jaws.
Mate!
Oh, that tiny independent film.
Fucking hell. It's been a long time coming.
It's been a very long time coming, but I'm delighted that we get the chance to talk
it's
about
gonna
this film.
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked it to death. You could put together a supercut of our previous 105 episodes and pull out a four-hour episode of us talking about Jaws.
I might do that.
Should we just put that
if
out?
If we record it and it doesn't work and sound very good, we'll just do that.
Let's do that. Yeah, easier, isn't it?
We'll just get Ben or Mark to interject and go, I agree.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And we'll, of course, have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We're going to have a brand new game.
Wow.
But we're not going to give them anything yet,
are we?
Well,
we need to make it.
We need to come up with it
first.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have our pop culture recommendation of the week. And we might even have a little special guest.
You never know.
Little.
We'll see. Wow. Keep them juiced up, eh?
Keep them juiced up, leave them dangling.
Wow.
See you in 2 weeks. It'll all work out.